In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. And boy, oh boy, is this episode about 25 episodes overdue. Because I am with the smiling faces of Ian Mills and Mark Ridley, who were my co-authors for The Leader's Secret Code. And in fact, I need to thank both of them because they were the ones who invited me to join the team in order to write The Leader's Secret Code. And it was a thoroughly wonderful experience. So Ian and Mark, thank you, and also welcome to the Leadership Enigma.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Adam.
Well, let's start with some introductions. So, Ian, give us a little bit of an intro about who you are, and then Mark, you do the same, but also tell us a little bit about your business, TPI. So go on, Ian, kick us off.
Well, I'm 57 years of age. I'm a business person. I've been running and owning Transform Performance International now for just over 20 years. I've got a corporate background in the financial sector and the technology sector. I'm lucky enough to have worked in about 60 countries for famous name organizations such as Deloitte and HP and Cisco, and it's been a massive privilege. Lucky enough to have co-authored now 3 books, the most recent of which is The Leader's Secret Code. I've got 3 daughters, I've got 2 grandchildren, and I love Manchester United Football Club.
Anyway, and that's the end of the podcast. So thanks very much for joining us. And I'm kidding. As an Arsenal and Watford fan, if that's even possible. But Ian, thank you. Mark.
Fine. I'd just like to point out that my friend Ian, who I have known for 30 years, is clearly an inherent liar because he's not 57, he's 58. However...
He's just forgotten, Mark.
It's a senior moment. His first public senior moment.
And we've got it here on the Leadership. We've got it. It's a first. You know we're keeping that in, don't you? All
right. Now, the only reason I know that is because he's exactly 4 weeks older than I am. So there is a point in the year when I can honestly say that I am younger than he is. So, yeah. Well, we started Transform Performance International together way back in 1999. So, the history that Ian just outlined is much of my shared history. So I won't bore you with that. But fundamentally, we have some great times working with clients, particularly around the mindsets, the attitudes, the belief systems, which drive behavior, which get results, which drive performance. End of story. And I've been lucky enough to do that in over 60 countries over the last 20-odd years. Like Ian, I also have 2 grandchildren. And so life's priorities are sort of shifting at the moment, which is great. Yeah.
Well, cool. You boys get about, don't you, with 60 countries, I tell you. We're going to have to come back to that one, without a doubt. Now, I was lucky enough to be involved in what was, I think, your third book you mentioned, and that was The Leader's Secret Code. And we'll come on to that. But you talked about a passion that you have, both of you, for belief systems. And I know you did the salesperson secret code, and then we moved into the leader secret code. Where's that come from? Where's that passion for belief systems come from?
In my opinion, it comes from curiosity. It comes from observing and experiencing people who do amazing things and trying to kind of understand, well, what is the difference that makes the difference? What is the magic? What is going on inside that person's head?
Yeah.
So what do I mean? Let's simplify it. If you look at 2 leaders, or if you look at 2 salespeople, or you look at 2 entrepreneurs, and they both have similar experience, similar background, similar education, and one is a high performer and the other is a lower performer. And you know, they're both articulate, they're both confident. There's something that is happening internally that is causing the top performer to be distinctive. And actually, the catalyst really for the research was the fact that I was part of an entrepreneurs group and used to attend private dinners. And the person who would do the afternoon or the after dinner, I beg your pardon, talk, there was always something that inspired me about the way in which they did what they did. And I thought, look, we need to add a science to that understanding. Right. So intuitively from experience, I knew that was about their mindset, their attitude, their belief system. And as Mark said, you know, we all know from a psychology point of view, it's the beliefs you hold that cause you to behave in the way you behave. And it's the behavior that will cause you to be the success you are or you are not. So the challenge for us is, how do you academically and scientifically unpack that and understand if there's a common backbone, for want of a better phrase?
You know, I always loved that was that really simple premise for the book, that as you believe, so you behave, and as you behave, so you perform.
Exactly.
But Mark, help me with this. What was the catalyst then for focusing on leaders and leadership then for the book? Because obviously that decision was made before I got involved. So
yeah, very, very simple, actually. We knew that a heck of a lot has been written about leadership.
Yeah.
Loads of research. I mean, you know, you don't need to name names. We all know where they are. It just occurred to us that, given the fact we'd had a lot of success with the previous book around the salesperson secret code,
Yes. The
next logical place to go was looking at the way in which the best leaders think, act, and do, you know? Yeah. And really that was it. It was nothing more than, as Ian says, a curiosity about, you know, what is it that really drives some of the best leaders in the way that their brains work, and the beliefs that support the outcomes they get. Nothing more than that.
So this is a really good point, isn't it? Because the book was predicated in a lot of research. And I think, didn't we end up with 143,000 separate data points? And I'm just not wise enough to know how we ended up with 143,000. So chaps, just tell the listeners a little bit about the things that we did in order to collect that amount of research. Because it was great fun. But
actually, we analysed something like 700,000 documents, archive data, yeah, around leadership, and that was really about trying to understand where should we focus, what were the common adjectives, what were the common descriptors, where would the priorities lie, and that led us to the creation of what we call seven destination beliefs. More about that in a moment, if I may. That gave us almost a hypothesis or a focus area, and then what we did is that we reached out to approximately 1,000 leaders globally across different vertical markets in order that we could interview them in a systematic way. What that meant, as you rightly suggest, is that we got 143,000 data points back from those individuals. That also included performance data, and that's really important. And the reason for that is that what we were able to do is we were able to identify the belief systems and put them into quadrants of performance. So therefore, we were able to effectively create the secret code. And the reason I say that is that the secret code is about the belief system that sets top performers apart. So that was a really important element. What we then did is we then augmented that data set with interviews of what we call iconic leaders. So an iconic leader is, almost to quote them, not somebody who is perfect, you know, because there is no such thing in a leadership world. Leadership is like golf. Nobody's yet perfected it. But they are individuals who are exemplars in areas of the research that we undertook. So we have this rich set of in fact, millions of points of data that we're able to filter and segment geographically, by vertical market, by gender, by tenure, by size of team. So we have a fascinating, rich set of information that is the difference that makes the difference in a world of leadership.
Sounds great to be involved with. I really enjoy doing it.
I've got builders here, so if you could hear builders as well, this will turn into a comedy episode.
No, I heard it. I mean, it's fine. It wasn't distracting. And I should also point out that I've got dogs here, which are barking as well. So I hope you can't.
Life
hear
in a pandemic. It certainly is.
Just
the way we roll, isn't it? But Mark, build on that for me, if you will.
Well, if you cast your mind back to the to what Ian said a moment ago about focus areas, and he said more about that in a minute, that was in a sense the key, because having filtered the 718,000 items, what we were left with were these seven key areas of focus that it was clear that leaders and researchers on leadership had been literally focused on for a long, long time. This was clearly what was important to leaders. So we turned those into what were known as destination beliefs. And the reason we call those destination beliefs is very simply that if you think about the way that you live your life, your career, whatever it might be, we're all on a bit of a journey. We're all you know, driving towards something. And these ideas around control or fulfillment or the way I communicate or my beliefs in leadership around how I empower others, whatever those might be, those are driving us towards that ultimate leadership destination. So this is why we call these destination beliefs. And that's why we come back to the premise, what a belief will drive an action, will drive a result.
Yeah.
And that's really what the destination beliefs were. So we identified, let me give you a simple example around control. So much was written around control, and we realized that leaders were absolutely focused on this idea that someone or something has to be accountable for the success that we have. That is a destination belief. And no one disagrees with that. The difference is to Ian's point earlier on, well, why might it be that one leader holds the same belief as another leader around control, but they have different levels of effectiveness? So it's the next belief system down which actually helps to drive the result.
Which was the journey motivators.
Which is journey motivators, exactly. Well, we haven't really spoken about those. Fundamentally, what you know is that as you drive towards that destination, we can take a number of different routes. We all have a different map. We all operate to a different way of thinking. That's the secret sauce. That's the secret code. What is it that makes one different from another?
I remember, chaps, the destination belief in relation to resilience, because there were two journey motivators there. One was work hard and one was work smart, wasn't it? And it wasn't saying that one is kind of the winner over the other. There's a balance between the two, isn't there?
That is the key. That is the key message that comes out of all of this research. It is not an either or. You're absolutely right, Adam. And this is where the secret sauce, if you like, comes in. When Ian talked about the top quartile leaders and the understanding of what is driving them to their best level performance level, we know that there is a balance between the way in which they have an attitude towards working hard and a balance towards working smart. Overdo the working smart, and maybe you spend so long trying to be so clever, you get nothing done. Overdo the working hard, and what you end up with is a whole load of burnout, a lot of people being busy, and nothing changing. That's the balance that we need to strike. So it's not one exclusively to exclusive of another.
Chaps, we spoke to a lot of amazing people as well, didn't we? That we called the Iconics. Tell us a little bit about that, because it was an amazing and eclectic mix of people.
Well, if I reverse back a moment, when we wrote the Salesperson Secret Code,
yes,
which I should just say had a strong leadership aspect to it. And the reason for that is that we believe that everybody sells, you know, whether you're a parent selling to your children to eat vegetables or whether you're a leader trying to sell to your stakeholders. Mm-hmm. We used Iconics in that book, and they all came from famous name organizations. It had a very corporate feel. What we wanted to do in the world of leadership is we wanted to spread it out to different situations. So what we tried to do is get an eclectic group of fascinating individuals who are the top of their game in the world in which they operate. So we have a military leader, we have an executive from Twitter, an executive from Jaguar Land Rover, you know, we have a Michelin star rated chef, we have a ballerina, we have a whole range of fascinating individuals who all face different challenges and different opportunities in the world in which they operate. And all of those stories bring the code and the data alive. And in my opinion, all of those stories are relevant to virtually anybody in a business or anybody who's an entrepreneur around the way in which they might develop their own leadership capability.
And Ian, you talked about a code. So Mark, I'll switch it across to you. Help people understand, what do we mean by a code? Because that's certainly been called quite something for both books, hasn't it? Ending
yes.
up with that result.
Yes. If you take, for example, the seven focus areas that we talked about, which became seven destination beliefs.
Yep.
With each destination belief, there were two journey motivators. What's driving me towards that destination belief? And the code is how the top quartile leaders balance the 14 journey motivators that are set against those seven destination beliefs. So if you want to know the full code, you probably have to read the book. But a really, really simple way of saying it is that top quartile leaders had a very similar outlook in the way that they balance these journey motivators. It's actually quite fascinating.
And I think it's so applicable at any times. I mean, we're in the middle of the world has gone slightly bonkers, or a lot bonkers. And so navigating through constant change is always something that we hear from leaders and leadership. And hopefully the code is in some way a guide for people.
Well, let me give you an example. One of the areas that you'll remember, Adam, we looked at was this whole idea around communication. We decided that from the research we were getting the feedback on was that communication really, if you think about it, often boils down into two key areas. A rather corporate way of communicating, very factual, very rational, very mm-hmm. measured, which is absolutely valid. But there's also another way of communicating, which I think great leaders know, which is what we called emotional. Now, we don't mean, screaming emotional. What we mean is the ability to insert into your communication a degree of humanity, a degree of pathos, a degree of emotion. And that's critical. Now, let's think about the situation we're in currently. In a leadership communication in the middle of what we're going through, when we're all forced into the situation that, look at us talking now, we're not face to face in your beautiful studio. The degree to which we now have to be aware as how our emotional communication versus our unemotional communication, I think has never been more important.
Yeah,
that sense of self-awareness, that sense of connection with others is vital. So I think the areas that we explored in the secret code are as valid in the pandemic, in this situation, as they were before and will be forevermore. I think that's why the seven areas came out the way they did. They are leadership constants.
Now, I know a lot of things have flowed on from the book for all of us. And I remember, I go back to the launch. I was asked a question in front of the 120 people that we had when we could actually have people in a room. Do you remember those times, chaps?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dim and distant memories. And I got asked, what was your kind of learning, standout learning, Adam, from this? And I remember saying human-centered leadership. And I've gone on to try and identify the seven components of human-centered leadership. So I've kind of got a question for both of you. What was your biggest learning from the research and writing of the Leader's Secret Code? I'll start with you, Ian.
I couldn't say it is one particular thing. I think it is a range of things.
Okay.
And, I believe that one of the most essential attributes of great leaders is their willingness and ability to be curious. And during that process of gathering data, of interviewing fascinating people in different environments, I learned so many things around the challenges that different leaders face, the way they overcome those challenges, the vulnerability that maybe they have, the way they are authentic, mm-hmm. And a whole range of different things that actually I'm asking them a question, but the response actually is making me question how I might recalibrate what I do and how I go about doing what I do. So it's a fascinating exercise, because you interview somebody and you gather data in order to write a book, but you learn from that information and you reflect upon the fact, I think I knew that, but I really need to resharpen my saw and I need to practice that, or I need to try that in a different way.
You know, Ian, some of the words you've just used there really resonate with me. And indeed, they found themselves into being part of the seven components of human-centered leadership. But Mark, if I switch across to you, what kind of standout learning or insight or reflection did you have going through the process of the book?
Well, I would agree with what Ian said. I think there was something else for me, which was around, it was the F word, flexibility.
I knew it was going to be flexibility, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. That wasn't so much a learning, it was a reinforcement. And, you know, the excellent leaders, the top quartile leaders, focused on that as part of their mantra. So again, we come back to this idea that the journey motivators that we talk about are not mutually exclusive. They're an integrated part of every individual. But the top leaders know how and when to flex in the direction of one of those journey motivators or another in order to drive out a better result. And that's a better result for others. And I think the surprise I had was in the research. In that, you know, the one thing that we did, if you remember, Adam, you know, this research was 17 countries and 11 different vertical markets. And yet, whatever vertical market they were in, whatever culture they were in, yep, top quartile leaders coalesced very much around the same view of leadership. So when I hear leaders say, well, it's a little different in our industry, I'm now able to look them in the eye and say, no, it's not. It's about leadership. It's not about your industry. It's about how you contextualize it, for sure. But please don't think that somehow you are different. This is about people. It's about connectedness. It's about doing the right thing in whatever circumstance you are in, or whatever industry or whatever culture you are in.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And as you say, the common denominator, it's about people. It's all about the people. And there were so many interesting aspects to working with you chaps, the research, the writing itself. I felt myself almost becoming a little bit of a storyteller when we were all contributing to the book, which was great fun. I wrote most of, I think, what I needed to write at 36,000 feet when we were allowed to go on those things called planes as well. But you've also continued the work because you've now got the Leader's Secret Code assessment, haven't you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Ian?
Very simple. In that the work we do with organizations around the world means that we need to add value to the way they think and the way they act and the way they behave. And in order to do that, we wanted to build a benchmarking tool. Yeah. So we have built an online psychometric instrument that will benchmark any leader against the research data set. Not only will it benchmark them against it, it will give them guidance on what they might consider doing in different situations in their capacity as a leader. So it is a fully valid psychometric instrument. And what we also do is we help organizations essentially create their own code. Right. What I mean by that is that if you profile a large number of leaders in any particular organization and you analyze that data against their performance data, not only can you then look at how they marry up against our research findings, you can create effectively their own code internally, which should therefore marry onto their geography, their vertical market, the nuances, their culture, their history. It shouldn't be that different to the benchmark that we've created, but there may be some subtle differences. So there's some very interesting data analytics work that can be done to give insight to organizations around the levers that they might consider pulling and the investments that they might make in the way in which they develop their leaders in whatever context that might be.
Now, Mark, I know you're building up a cadre of super coaches now, aren't you? Accredited in this particular assessment. I hope to join that elite group at some point. I think we've got a chat next week about that. How are you? You know, what is the aspiration really for the tool? What will it, you know, hopefully give you at the end of the day? Are you looking to be able to aggregate even more data for even more insight?
Yes. It's always great to get more data, and because, you know, my attitude is that new data drives new conversations. Who knows where this could end up, you know? And what about Leader Secret Code version 2? You know, I know we've only just got over version 1, Adam, and we're just recovering. But
have
what
we
about
got a have we got a sequel in us? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I think there might be. I mean, you know, it worked for 50 Shades of Grey. Why not for the Leader Secret Code? So absolutely, there is that. Do you know what? This is where the altruist in me comes out, actually. You know, anything that we can do, I think, to help give back a bit is really good. And I just want this to be available to as many people as possible, because I get so pumped up about this being available as a really powerful coaching tool,
yep.
A really powerful way for people to gain insight. You know, I don't necessarily want it to be kept inside Transform Performance. You know, I think when you've got something that you can be proud of, but equally can do some good, why not get it out there? So there is, of course, there's always a business mindset behind it, but there's also, for me, massively altruistic perspective on this too.
So the book, or should I say our book, is available, yes, from all good retailers and yes, online. Yes. How can people get in contact with you, gents, especially to follow up on some of the work that you've done, the salesperson secret code, the leader secret code, the assessment? Best way for people to get in touch with you and Transform Perform International?
So probably in this day and age, the best way is via LinkedIn.
Right.
So if you just simply search on my name, Ian Mills, and maybe put in the word Transform or Leader Secret Code. I say that partly because there's tens, if not hundreds, of Ian Millses on there, but you'll find me quite easily on there. Alternatively, ian.mills@transformperformance.com or via our website, which is transformperformance.com.
Great. And Mark, for you?
Well, it's the same thing. I'm obviously mark.ridley@transformperformance.com. And I would say, if you are looking me up on LinkedIn, I'm not to be confused with the comedy club owner, Mark Ridley, who lives in Detroit.
Well, anybody make that mistake once.
It frequently happens. I get asked for my latest material. Am I going on tour? All that kind of stuff. So no, definitely me.
Well, listen, chaps, it's been great. I know we only scratched the surface on these episodes, but I hope what we do is we whet people's appetite to try and find out more. Now, whilst I've got you here, I've got a few fun questions for you too. So, Ian, I'm going to start with you. This is a question for you. What's your favourite hobby, or do you have a lockdown hobby at the moment? Because so many people have taken up new things during this very strange time. So, hobby-wise, what's it for you right now?
It's going to be incredibly boring because it's going to be in the context of gardening. So I'm heavily into lawns.
Don't hear that phrase very often, do you? I'm heavily into lawns.
You don't hear that phrase very often, but I think I am a guru of lawns. But I am quite proud in the sense that I have put up something like 50 meters of fencing. I've put up a huge amount of trellising. So my wife does all this sort of fine, delicate elements of gardening. I do hedges, fences, and lawns.
That's rather marvellous, because some of my fencing has come down, so I think I'll be on to you for some help on that front. Mark, I've got a question for you. What's your favourite word?
Holiday.
Yeah, I think that's probably quite appropriate, isn't
because
it?
Because really? I'm desperate for one. And you know what? You know when you know that you want something, you can't have it, and your brain won't stop thinking about it. That's where I am at the moment.
You'll be thinking of the Madonna song soon as well, won't you? All right, I've got a question as well for both of you now. And whenever you're ready, you can answer first. What would be your best advice to a 21-year-old self? So what would be your best advice to a 21-year-old Ian or a 21-year-old Mark?
My advice, it might sound a bit hackneyed, but I believe it to be true. Grasp every opportunity, carpe diem. You never know when it's going to come to a crashing, grinding halt. Enjoy it, make the most of it, and challenge yourself.
Yeah, seize the day indeed. I agree with that. Ian?
Well, I was brave. But the advice would be braver.
Wow, I like that too. Well, there we have it. Listen, chap, this has been great, other than the fact that I would much rather be doing this in person. So I send virtual hugs and good wishes for you to stay safe. And we'll do some more of this, because definitely, I think what we can do is go a little bit deeper. But I'm hoping that people will reach out and they'll embrace the leader's secret code. But you've been great. Thanks so much for taking the time out on this crazy day to chat to me.
Thanks for having
You're
us.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, chaps.
Thank you.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.